The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. And Aaron, we will have the Lakewood Police Chief on right after your 2:30 newscast to give us details live on this bizarre catalytic converter story.
Yeah.
So we'll get you a lot more details from the chief. Crazy. So, yeah, I mean, if you're just tuning in, catalytic converter thefts up 1,000% in the greater Seattle Puget Sound area. They're valuable. You can fence them for the metals in the converters. And it, you know, costs $1,000 if you have yours stolen, you got to replace it. And so when I was thinking about the show this weekend, I thought, well, this might be kind of a funny line that my invention that's going to make me rich is if you disconnect any part of a catalytic converter, the entire undercarriage of the car will immediately just come crashing down to the ground. But I didn't end up using that because we found out something far more gruesome. So a guy's sleeping in his truck. We still don't know why he was sleeping in his truck. 3:30 in the morning, 3:45 a.m. And then he feels the truck shaking, hears some noise underneath. So the truck owner gets out with a gun, shoots the alleged catalytic converter thief twice. The thief wasn't dead. So the truck owner reportedly tied up the thief and tied the other end of the rope to the ball hitch on his truck and dragged the guy to his death and then dumped the body behind some railroad tracks. So there's so many bizarre unanswered questions here. So we'll talk to the Lakewood police chief about this coming up right after the bottom of the hour. But you don't want to miss that because this is one of the most bizarre crimes I've heard of in a lot. And we get bizarre crimes every day. We've had so many strange, bizarre, never thought I'd see this type of stories. And then it gets even stranger. Every day, when we think we cannot top the weirdness of our region, then tomorrow comes and we top it. And then the day after tomorrow arrives and we top it again. It's crazy. Let me tell you what. Let me fold all of this into. Let's get to this hour's big lead.
The big lead, top story.
So the other issue is just the number of shootings in our region over the weekend. The tragic death of the Seattle police officer, Lexi Harris, just pulled over to help an accident on I-5. She was at end of shift, 1:18 a.m., and she got out of her car. She was struck, hit, and killed on I-5, just trying to help. Didn't need to stop, but police officers, out of sense of duty, they do stop, and out of selflessness, they will put themselves in harm's way. And then somebody who was involved in the accident that she was stopping to assist runs over and steals her car, which leads me to guess that the person who stole her car was under the influence of something, alcohol, drugs, which is what caused them to get in the wreck, and they didn't want to be blood tested right away, so they're willing to steal a car to get away, and now they're reportedly still on the loose. They still haven't found the person who stole the Seattle officer's car. And that's one of many, many tragic stories over the weekend. Down in White Center, you had four people shot, two of them dead. And that was reportedly a gang-related. When I say reportedly, Andre Taylor is the $150,000 a year street czar that Jenny Durkin hired. Andre Taylor, by his own admission, a former pimp, pimped out underage girls back in an earlier day. And now as street czar, he's speaking out. He talked to Cairo 7 News. But here's what's notable about this. There was a 19-year-old black man murdered at CHOP named Horatio Anderson, or Horace Anderson. His father is also named Horace Anderson, and his father was one of the people shot in White Center who survived. And so here's Andre Taylor, our street czar, talking about this, and you can pretty much be certain that this was a gang shooting because the guy who's on the streets, he says we need a gang summit to avoid this sort of thing.
After last night's shooting, Andre Taylor, founder of Not This Time, says he talked to the top brass in Seattle and King County.
When I talked to Chief Diaz and Sheriff Mitzi, I said Seattle needs to do something that it hasn't done before. It needs to have a gang summit. It needs to be in a no judgment zone, but there needs to be some type of gang summit because I've seen it work in Los Angeles before. So we need to do something different.
One of those shot in White Center was Anderson's dad, also named Horace. He was released from Harborview with a gunshot wound to his face. Now he and Taylor believe he and his family need to be relocated for their safety. In fact, Taylor has started a GoFundMe account to help Anderson raise the money to help his family move while he recovers from his injuries.
Okay, you can do whatever you want with your money, and you can give to whatever GoFundMe you choose. But why would anybody, you know, presumably the murder of his son at CHOP was gang related. You know, the two murder victims at CHOP were both teenage black. One was a kid, 16 years old. One was a young man, 19 years old, Horace Anderson. That has been suspected to be gang related right from the get-go. And now I talked to the attorney for the Anderson family a few weeks ago. And they're suing the city of Seattle for millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. And now the street czar wants to set up a GoFundMe so people can help his dad move away because of this gangland warring that's going on around here. And trying to think of a way to say this that won't get me in too much trouble. It's bizarre to me that the relatives, you know, the guy who was murdered at CHOP, and look, City of Seattle did a lot of things wrong, but, you know, if this guy was ganged up, as the police suspect, that's what police sources have told me, if he was ganged up, then I don't know that I want the taxpayers on the hook for tens of millions of dollars in that death. I certainly wouldn't give to a GoFundMe to help somebody who allegedly is in a gang, or that's what's suggested by Andre Taylor, at least, that if he says we need a gang summit to stop these shootings and we need a GoFundMe to move this guy away. But why are families being richly rewarded, generational money, if they win the lawsuit and if they get the GoFundMe? Why are families being rewarded because of alleged gang ties with you know, the father and the son? It's just very, very strange to me how crime seems to pay around here, or being in a gang often pays off if something bad happens, pays off for the family. But, again, you can give to whoever you want. You want to give to a GoFundMe, that's private money. Feel free to do so. Much more. We have on Lexi Harris, the Seattle officer. I just got a note that from the Marysville police that Lexi Harris is field training officer. Just did a lateral transfer from Seattle to Marysville, and her FTO is just telling everybody what an incredible young cop she was. 5 years on the job. But this is what is so tragic and why this is such a dangerous path that we're on. If we get rid of all the great cops, because great Seattle cops don't want to work in Seattle anymore. That is just the sad truth, because they have a city council that hates police officers, that is trying to wreak as much havoc on our city as possible so that they can destroy it and rebuild it in their image. So we have an awful lot of great cops who are just choosing to leave. And then we have other great cops who so tragically die, like happened to this officer this weekend. And I shared with you part of an email that I got a couple of weeks ago. It was after the three Tacoma police officers were charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter in the Manny Ellis case. And a cop who I know sent me an email, and I'll paraphrase it because I didn't pull it up right now, but he was saying, is this really what the public wants? That great cops and, you know, everything about those Tacoma cops was pretty sterling until the night with Manny Ellis. But he said that one night, and there's a longtime veteran officer who's a friend of mine, and one night he came home and his wife heard him. You may have heard the story about one of the greatest sounds that the spouse of a cop can hear is the sound of ripping Velcro, because that means their loved one is home and has taken off the uniform, has done a good day's work, and that there are few things more comforting, especially, you know, in the middle of the night, than being asleep, praying right before you sleep that your loved one comes home at end of shift, and then you hear that Velcro. And they have made it through another day. And my friend took off his uniform, and his wife said, is this a sign? Is this a positive sign that you're thinking about just being done with it? And this man is a great cop, a great person. And he's so torn right now because he could retire. But he also understands that we need great cops on the street now more than ever. And you have a city council that wants to force out all the great cops. You have people like the grandma with the nose ring. I can't think of her name. West Seattle. Cool. Edgy. And I thought maybe that would bring it up to the top of mind. But with the grandma with the nose ring, who wants Seattle police to reduce force based on race. And she wants Seattle police to fire and get rid of, lay off, white cops, regardless of how good they are, regardless of how long they've been serving. But she wants them to get rid of people based on their skin color, because that becomes the obsession. And we're going to be left with younger, more inexperienced cops. And people are going to die because of that. Either you're going to have some criminals who are at the wrong end of a police situation that goes awry, or you're going to have cops who hesitate because they don't want to be the next one put on trial because they had to do their job. Go watch the video from this weekend in Chicago of Chicago police chasing a guy with a gun down alleys, and as they get closer, the guy lifts up, fires his gun at the officers. The officers, in a split second, have to return fire. I believe two officers were hit. They're both going to recover. The suspect with the gun was hit. But if you hesitate for a quarter second, because if it goes through your mind, well, if I fire my gun, they're going to just want to put me on trial as a murderer. Cops are going to die because of that. And so whether it's a car accident with scumbags who steal the officer's personal vehicle as she got out to help, or the good cops being drummed out, this all goes back to our politicians. And so look at this. We've got, and a lot of this goes back to drug gang wars. But you had four shot in White Center this weekend, two dead. Shilshol, a driver shot at a motorcyclist who had a person behind him on the bike. They were both shot. That driver of the car is still on the loose. The White Center shooting, they're on the loose. And on it goes. Pioneer Square, 12:20, Saturday morning. 911 calls reported gunshots, First and Cherry. Suspect left the area after the shooting. Officers found a man with a gunshot wound to his chest and began giving him aid, but he died. 23 years old, he died. Now, somebody said, why don't they, if all these shooters are on the loose, why don't they give a description of the shooters? It is presumed, somebody asked me that about, you know, Austin, Texas. There was a mass shooting this weekend. 19 people shot, one or two have died now. And why don't they give out a description of the shooter? Well, the Austin police did. They said that it was a younger, thin, black man with dreadlocks. But the Austin newspaper said they would not give out a description because it could be divisive. And so, you know, you got people who you could eliminate. Austin's about 15% African-American or black. And you could eliminate 85% of the people if you're out on the streets and you want to be wary that there's a shooter in your midst. But sometimes the media will withhold that for, you know, purely, you know, progressive. That's what's considered progressive reasons. And that's exactly what's happened down in Austin, Texas. In Chicago this weekend, 43 people shot, 3 dead. Doesn't even get a blip. I mean, mass shootings do not get any attention if the mass shooter isn't white. And then here in Seattle, a lot of this is gang shooting, and it's black and brown people who are dying, and we have politicians who are encouraging it by making this the drug capital of the country, the easiest, best place to be a heroin or meth addict. The dealers have a clear line, and as I've said, I've talked to Homeland Security just a couple of weeks ago, and they said this is an epidemic. You've got fentanyl and other drugs coming across an unchecked Mexico-U.S. border, and they come right up I-5 into the Seattle area because this has become the best place to be a drug addict. And so if you have that many customers, you're going to have that many people fighting for turf to sell drugs, and then you have, you know, the shocking murder and violence rates that we have in our region right now. So that's the honest truth of what's going on around here. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, it's one of the strangest stories I've heard in a long, long time. We're going to talk live with Lakewood Police Chief next about the catalytic converter thief who ended up being killed by truck owner he was trying to steal from. Details coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. All right, I said in a time where it seems like crimes can't even possibly get more bizarre, we have one of the most bizarre that I've heard in a long time. Sean, we got a guest on the line there?
We sure do, Dory.
All right, fantastic. Let me welcome to the show the Lakewood Police Chief, Mike Zorro, joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Chief, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Good afternoon. No problem, Dory.
Okay, thank you. So walk me through this, because as I said, the more details we got, it just sounded crazier and crazier. So this was last night when this happened, or early this morning, I should say?
Actually, early Saturday morning.
Okay.
About four in the morning on Saturday.
Okay. So a guy is sleeping in his truck, and he heard noise or felt the truck shaking. Apparently, correct?
That's correct. And then gets out and sees what to him looks like somebody trying to steal his catalytic converter.
Okay. And so, what happened after that?
Well, he immediately confronts the person with a firearm and shoots multiple times at him while the person is still down on the ground. Actually hits him, and the victim, you know, proclaims, "You shot me." And the suspect in this takes the guy's Sawzall, throws it in the back of the truck, and you know, there's another verbal exchange, and then he ends up, you know, it sounds kind of gruesome to describe, but ends up tying him to the bumper of his truck and dragging him out into a field where he left him to die.
So the alleged catalytic converter thief did not die from the gunshots. Do you know how many times he was hit?
No, not off the top of my head. Multiple times, I can tell you that.
Okay, but the gunshot didn't kill him, and how do you know that? How do you know that he wasn't dead from the gunshots? Well,
sure, this is based on statements from the suspect that the suspect made to our detectives about what the victim was saying. Well, he was speaking after being shot. It's all based on what the suspect disclosed to our detectives.
So then the truck owner, like you said briefly, but I just want to make sure I understand this. So he tied a rope to the alleged catalytic converter thief, tied the other end to the ball hitch on his truck, and dragged the guy down the street. How far did he drag the guy? Do we know that?
I heard differing reports. We're still trying to examine the scene and you know, measure drag marks and things like that, but over 100 feet anyways.
And then dumped the body?
That's correct, and that's not the entire incident, but the dragging part of it is what our witness saw, and that's what led to the 911 call.
When you say that's not the entire incident, is there more that's publicly available? What else is there besides all that?
No, I'm sorry. The witness that called it in didn't see the shooting part.
Oh,
he only
okay.
saw the part where the truck was dragging a dark object behind it, and not even knowing what it was. The witness saw the truck drag this dark object into this field and then leave without the dark object. And then he called 911, and our officers, when they arrived, discovered this deceased person in the field next to the railroad tracks.
And so then the witness who called in to 911, as you're talking to him, the truck and driver, they came into view. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. As the officers are there talking, the witness says, "Hey, that's the truck right there." And then they're able to go and stop the truck and talk to the suspect that's there behind the wheel, and everything kind of rolled out from there.
I've got so many questions. Do we know why the guy was sleeping in his truck? Was it on his property? Is he a homeless guy? Why was the guy sleeping in his truck that night?
Well, partly because he is homeless, but for that at that specific location, he was a pseudo security guard for an auto dealership that's right near there, and was hired just to kind of sleep in his truck and stay there and keep an eye on things.
Wow. Okay, and this, you know, like I said, Chief, every day I think things cannot get any more bizarre. And I mean, this is way up there on the list of bizarre stories that I've heard.
It is, yeah, and it just everything about it leaves you shaking your head. Just that, you know, at every turn, there's something weird about it, and that, you know, to have somebody try and steal the catalytic converter off a truck that somebody's sitting in and sleeping in, to have that person get out and just go to shooting right away, and then drag the person to their death, and then, you know, even after all that, just stop and tell us what happened. It's just all very strange.
And can you relate what he said? I mean, did he have any kind of coherent reason? Was he under the influence at the time? I mean, I can't imagine doing that unless you're just completely out of your mind. I know you don't have toxicology back, but did the officers who responded suspect that he was under the influence?
Nothing that stood out to them, at least initially. So it's really hard to say maybe some mental capacity things there that they can, you know, people might look at later. But really, in just having the conversation with him, he said he was tired of his stuff being stolen, was it. And it just was out of frustration and anger.
That is unbelievable. Okay. And he knew what the consequences were going to be of how he dealt with it, right? I mean, you go from being a crime victim to somebody who's probably going to spend the rest of his life, or most of the rest of his life, if he's found guilty of what will be charged. But, I mean, did he understand the consequences? I mean, you mentioned there might be some mental challenges. Did he get it?
It sure seemed like it. I mean, he was apologetic to detectives, and at the time they talked to him, I believe he understood what, you know, the consequences were going to be. But who knows in the heat of, you know, what, you know, when it was happening, if he fully appreciated it. But I got to say, there was, you know, all the events I just described took long enough to occur that I would think it, at some point it would have crossed his mind to either just stop, just, you know, run away or flee or just, you know, get the guy help or do something other than right. drag him to his death.
Unbelievable. All right, Chief. It's a very strange story. I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on with me this afternoon.
No problem. Take care.
Okay. It's Lakewood Police Chief Mike Zaro. They always get good people there as police chief in Lakewood. One of Chief Zaro's predecessors, Brett Farrar, who's the chief in that horrible tragedy, the Lakewood Four who were shot. I got to know Chief Farrar pretty well. He became a really good friend of mine. He passed away from cancer a few years ago. But they get good people there in Lakewood. And I appreciate Chief Zaro coming on with us this afternoon. All right, so there you have it. You got reaction to what you just heard? You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we do have, oh, coming up next, our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio. Straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Yeah, I want to congratulate Jay Inslee and the Washington State Legislature. Well done, all of you. Well, Democrats in the legislature. I'm not congratulating the Republicans, but Jay Inslee and the Democrats. Washington now officially has the third highest gas prices in the United States of America. That's great job. Great job. Big tax on everybody who drives in our state. Beautiful thing. California is number one at $4.22 a gallon. Nevada, $3.66 a gallon. And we're number three at $3.61 a gallon. Draining family accounts so you can feel good about yourselves. And it doesn't do anything for the planet or for the climate or for any of that. Doesn't do a thing. All it does is it drains money from family budgets. But, man, I tell you, they are impressive. Jay Inslee and the Democratic legislature and how effectively and efficiently they can drain money from the people of this state. It's a great job. And with that is mere prelude. Let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Okay, I got a bunch of them here, but I'm trying to find everything that I can squeeze in. I will tell you, Kamala Harris, she is losing the left. She had that bizarre answer last week when Lester Holt said, "Why haven't you been to the border? Joe Biden put you in charge of a humanitarian crisis." And she said, "I haven't been to Europe either." It's a horrible answer. And she's losing even the far radical left at CNN.
"You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making."
"I've said I'm going to go to the border. And
when are you going to the border, Vice President?"
"The administration has asked." "I'm not finished. I've said I'm going to the border."
It's just a little cringeworthy. And I know that her allies in the White House and elsewhere are watching it and just kind of wondering what is going on.
That was on CNN's Sunday morning show, that Kamala's allies are wondering what's going on. And they are, you know, they're scared to death because she is very unlikable. And they know that if Joe gets worse cognitively, that they're going to have a serious problem on their hands. All right. Also, we found out the last few days that a word that you and I have used without any malice, but, you know, kind of innocently have used, is now horribly unacceptable with the Biden administration and with the radical left. And that word, and Sean, if you have to dump this, stand by, because it's a horrible, horrible word. Mother. Oh, yeah, yeah, just that. No, no, there's nothing else. There's nothing attached to it. Mother or mom or mama. You can't say that anymore. So the new OMB directors have been testifying before Congress, and they have eliminated the word mother for people who have babies because it's not inclusive.
You shifted, I also noticed you changed a term in your budget work. You shifted from, in places, from using the term mother to birthing people rather than mother. Can you help me get a good definition of birthing people?
Well, I'll check on the language there, but I think if we're talking about those who give birth, I think we're talking about, I don't know how else to explain it to you other than...
I was a little taken back when I just read it and saw it, that it's that the term mother was gone in spots and it was replaced with birthing people.
Yeah, that's progressive. That's hip. And then the OMB director, Shalonda Young, same thing.
There are certain people who do not have gender identities that apply to female or male. So we think our language needs to be more inclusive in how we deal with complex issues. I think the underlying issue is most important that your colleagues, Lauren Underwood and others, are working on is to try to ensure that those of color who are giving birth leave the hospital alive. And that's the issue rather than the verbiage. The verbiage matters, but the underlying issue is extremely important. And a lot of your colleagues are working hard on this because all of those giving birth should have access to the same quality health care.
But you can't call them mothers, right? Okay. No, you can't. You really can't.
So is the administration's official policy to replace the term woman with birthing people?
I think our official policy is to make sure when people get service from their government that they feel included, and we're trying to use inclusive language.
See what a jerk you've been your whole life by calling your birthing person your mom? I bet you didn't celebrate birthing person's day in May. You probably used something that was horrible. You called it Mother's Day, didn't you? And then I realized, well, we got to clean up a lot of stuff. We got to clean up a lot of things in pop culture, a lot of our musical history. We got to fix all of that.
Birthing person, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
Birthing person,
I can hear you crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows.
It's much better.
I don't have
I feel much more inclusive now. But it goes on from there, of course. We've got to fix everything.
Birthing person.
That's much better. Now we can be proud of who and what we are.
Bismillah. No, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah. We will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah. We will not let you go. We'll not let you go.
Never.
We'll not let you go.
Oh.
Oh, birthing person,
mia,
birthing person.
Mamma mia, let me go.
Beelzebub
has a devil put aside for me.
All right.
For me.
I hope that you will check yourself. Check your privilege. And stop calling your mother your... I did it again! Stop calling your birthing person your mother, okay? I want you to be... If anything comes out of my show... I want us to be more enlightened and, yes, more loving. Okay? That's all I can ask. Okay, thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon. We've got the Tom and Curly Show coming up next. And God bless you in these crazy times. I'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Peter.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.